Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading the MRT for Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. MISD recapture payments close to $1 billion. Total since 2013-14 estimated to top $980 million after next school year by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD recapture payments to the state are approaching $1 billion. The district reported in its budget workshop last week that by the end of 2023-24 school year, Midland ISD will have spent $9,083,966 in recapture payments, revenue sent to other school districts as part of the so-called Robin Hood system since the 2013-14 school year. According to the website recapturetexas.org, recapture, also known as Robin Hood, allows the state of Texas to remove local property tax dollars from public school districts. Legislators then use these dollars to help balance the rest of the state budget. Recapture began as a limited revenue source for education funding, but it has grown exponentially, now taking nearly $5 billion in property taxes from Texas public school districts per year, the website states. For Midland ISD, officials have estimated recapture payments of $161,982,848 in 2022-23 and $158,983,077 in 2023-24. The Texas School Coalition, which Midland ISD is a member, provides the information for recapturetexas.org. It states approximately 160 school districts around the state were expected to pay recapture during the 2021-22 school year. Those with the largest payments were Austin ISD at $791,389,490, Houston ISD at $302,746,565, Plano ISD at $207,239,972, and Dallas ISD at $207,239,972. Midland ISD ranked fifth that year at $129,073,485. The Texas School Coalition also reported other Permian Basin districts in the top 10 across the state were Pecos, Barstow, Toya ISD at number 6 at $106,744,467 and Wink Loving ISD at number 9 at $74,488,295. Seven other districts were among the highest 42 recapture payments in the state in 2021-22, all paying more than $10 million in recapture. They included Rankin ISD at number 15, Glasscock ISD number 23, Grady ISD at number 26, and Stanton ISD at number 34. Districts are also subject to recapture due to property wealth within the district, but property wealth often does not correlate to personal wealth among the families of students served by the district, recapturetexas.org stated. Recapture districts can be found throughout the state. Some are very small, while others are some of the largest districts in the state. These are rural, urban, and suburban, and every circumstance in between. MISD recapture to date, 2013-14, $14,957,788, 2014-15, $32,077,635. 2015-16, $47,513,121. 2016-2017, $45,434,584. 2017-18, $36,504,917. 2018-19, $64,844,008. 2019-2020, $138,846,179. 2020-21, $154,436,561. 2021-22, $128,385,355. 2022-23, $161,982,848. 2023-24, $158,983,077. Total, $983,966,073, indicates estimate source, Midland ISD. Top recapture payments in Texas, 2021-22, Austin ISD, $791,389,490, Houston ISD, $302,746,565, Plano ISD, $207,239,972. Dallas ISD, $207,239,972. Midland ISD, $129,073,485. Pecos, Barstow, Toya ISD, $106,744,467. Eanes ISD, $106,468,805. Highland Park ISD, $103,825,084. Wink Loving ISD, $74,488,295. Also, 15, Rankin ISD, $48,075,718. 20, Reagan County ISD at $35,964,795. 23, Glasscock County ISD, $32,815,360. 26, Grady ISD at $25,893,380. 34, Stanton ISD at $18,763,974. 37, Andrews ISD at $11,703,399. 42, Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD, $10,127,571. Source, Texas School Coalition. City residents can turn off own water. City ends debate about whether the city needs to be called to turn off water, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. There is a conversation taking a place across social media that residents have to call the City of Midland to have their water turned off if there is an emergency. The City of Midland said this week that is not the case. This misinformation is connected to the replacement of lids connected to where the water meter resides and where a person turns on and off the water to their respective properties. City officials told the Reporter-Telegram that they could no longer get the metal lids and that the plastic lids are a tighter fit. There is no special key to get it open, Utilities Director Carl Crego said. Attached to the new lids and other metal ones are the antenna that the city uses for the remote read for the water usage. The antenna looks like a white disc. City officials said that a person can use a longer screwdriver to help pry open the plastic lids if needed. Crego did communicate with the Reporter-Telegram that once a person turns off the water, he or she should make sure an outside spigot is open to help bleed air out of the system and prevent pipe problems before turning the water back on. The City of Midland offered the following video on the water meter replacement taking place across the city, MidlandTexas.gov/977/water-meter-replacement. Crego's explanation starts at the 1:41 mark, according to the city. MISD teachers making $100,000? It's possible. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A pair of programs provide Midland ISD teachers the opportunity to increase the amount they take home in salary and stipends. Opportunity culture and the teacher incentive allotment can allow some teachers the ability to add an additional $30,000 plus to their salaries, which at Midland ISD starts at $58,000 for starting teachers. Jesse Garcia, Executive Director of Talent Acquisition and Development for the district, said the district has been using social media to spread the news of the programs and their worth to teachers young and older. Opportunity Culture is a program funded locally while the Texas Education Agency funds the teacher incentive allotment. It's an awesome opportunity for teachers to earn the compensation they deserve, Garcia said. About Opportunity Culture, Garcia said Opportunity Culture is a program that allows teachers to extend their reach and potentially earn stipends from $8,000 to $17,000. She said teachers must apply locally and submit evidence of student growth and student achievement and also show high ratings on the T-TES, which she said is the Texas Teacher Evaluation and Support System. They submit those to district, we rate them and let teachers know if they qualify, Garcia said. Higher stipends happen when teachers extend their reach through student or teacher development. Added responsibilities mean opportunities for extra stipends. Opportunity Culture was implemented inside the district 3 years ago, according to Garcia, but the current administration wants to remind current and potential future teachers of the ways they can use it to earn additional compensation. About teacher incentive allotment, the Texas Education Agency has approved the teacher incentive allotment for Midland ISD, and Garcia said up to 177 can earn a designation. The TIA's qualifications are similar to Opportunity Culture, but the state uses the campus where a teacher works as part of the designation process. In short, a teacher can earn 3 ratings, recognized, exemplary, and master's. Averaged stipend for each is $4,000 for recognized, $8,500 for exemplary, and $16,000 for master's. The more needy a campus is based on demographics, including students that are economically disadvantaged, the higher the stipends, Garcia said. Officials hope that this stipend makes it easier for districts to staff underserved or hard-to-staff campuses. Another opportunity to boost one's salary, according to Garcia, is to become nationally board certified. She said the Permian Strategic Partnership is providing grants to work with those certified teachers so they get recognized through the TIA. This can be beneficial to those who teach electives. Those wanting to investigate opportunities for teachers and other staff at Midland ISD can attend a job fair from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Legacy High School. Trial begins this week for Trinity administrators by Stuart Doreen. 4th Trinity School of Midland administrators are headed to trial this week. The trial will determine whether a Midland County jury believes Shelby Hammer, Todd Fries, Crystal Myers, and Adrian Clifton failed to make required child abuse reports and attempted to intentionally conceal those reports, a state felony. The 4 were indicated in November. The Reporter-Telegram article stated the arrests were related to assaults that took place for 4 months in 2019, according to an arrest affidavit. The victim was forensically interviewed by the Midland Children's Advocacy Center on February 22, 2022. At the time, Hammer acted as the head of school, Freeze, the middle school and upper school dean of students, Myers, the head of middle school, and Clifton, the assistant head for administration, director of admission. There have been no reports as to whether any of the four have left Trinity. All four are listed on Trinity's website. Jury selection is expected to last until Tuesday afternoon. Court officials said opening arguments could take place before court adjourns on Tuesday. Attorneys for the Trinity administrators had commented consistently that the trial is taking place because the district attorney's office allowed themselves to be bullied into allowing Midland Police Department officials misuse and distort the law against these people. Midland County announced County Road 1232 at Monahan's Draw is open to the public as of April 17th, courtesy of Midland County. County Road 1232 at Monahan's Draw opens by Ben Schaefer, staff writer. Midland County announced County Road 1232 at Monahan's Draw is open to the public as of April 17th. The overall goal of building the road is to finish Loop 250 around Midland, the county said. South County Road 1232 will provide a continuous route south of Midland from State Highway 158 to the western end of Loop 250. The county stated it will help reduce the amount of traffic on I-20 and provide an alternate route for drivers traveling south of Midland. The portion of County Road 1232 opening Monday was constructed in two projects. The northernmost portion was known as South County Road 1232 Phase 2, and it begins at West County Road 140 due southeast until just before Monahan's Draw. The second portion runs from the north side of the draw to South County Road 1210 and was known as South County Road 1232 at Monahan's Draw, according to the county. The total cost of both projects was $8 million. South County Road 1232 Phase 2 cost was $3 million, and South County Road 1232 at Monahan's Draw was $5 million. See the EVs eligible for tax credits and why most aren't by Tom Krischer, AP Auto Writer. Detroit, 10 electric or plug-in hybrid vehicles will be eligible for $7,500 U.S. tax credit dollars, while another 7 could get $3,750 under new federal rules that go into effect on Tuesday. But under the Treasury Department rules and other provisions of last year's Inflation Reduction Act, most of the more than 60 electric or plug-in hybrids on sale in the U.S. won't get any tax credits. That could slow acceptance of electric vehicles and could delay reaching President Joe Biden's ambitious goal that half of new passenger vehicles sold in the U.S. run on electricity by 2030. The new rules, which govern how much battery minerals and parts can come from countries that don't have free trade agreements with the U.S., bumped 9 vehicles off the tax credit eligibility list into effect January 1st. The 10 vehicles eligible for the full $7,500 credit are Tesla's Model 3 Performance Model, the Tesla Model Y, Ford's F-150 Lightning Pickup, the Chrysler Pacifica, and the Lincoln Aviator Grand Touring plug-in hybrids. Also, General Motors will have 5 models eligible this year, including its top-selling Chevrolet Bolt and Bolt EUV, as well as the Cadillac Lyriq, the Chevrolet Silverado electric pickup, and the upcoming Chevy Equinox small SUV. the seven models that could get a $3,750 credit include the Jeep Wrangler and Grand Cherokee plug-ins, Ford's Mustang Mach-E SUV, Escape plug-in, and E-Transit electric van, the Lincoln Corsair Grand Touring plug-in, and the standard range rear-wheel drive version of Tesla's Model 3. Consumers can check to see if the EV they're considering is eligible for a credit at www.fueleconomy.gov. To be eligible, electric vehicles or plug-ins have to be manufactured in North America. SUVs, vans, and trucks can't have a sticker price greater than $80,000, while cars can't sticker for more than $55,000. There also are income limits for buyers. The Treasury Department says the new list shows that families who want to buy an electric or plug-in vehicle will continue to have a number of options to receive a full or partial tax credit in the near term. Under rules designed to build electric vehicle production and a supply chain in the U.S., the reduction in eligible EVs also could conflict with the administration's proposed strict new automobile pollution limits announced last week. The new standards would require up to 2/3 of new vehicles sold in the U.S. to be electric by 2032. That's a nearly tenfold increase over current electric vehicle sales. Many of the vehicles that aren't eligible for the credit are made outside of North America, but their manufacturers are building assembly and battery plants in the U.S., and more vehicles will become eligible. Chevron touts renewable gasoline as alternative to electric vehicles by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation plans to showcase renewable gasoline it claims will eventually offer similar emission savings to electric cars just days after the U.S. proposed the toughest ever tailpipe pollution limits. Tests show that the fuel, partly made from renewable feedstocks like used cooking oil, produces 40% fewer greenhouse gases than regular gasoline, Chevron said in a statement Monday. A Toyota Motor Corporation hybrid, RAV4, running on renewable gasoline would have a similar carbon footprint to a pure electric vehicle in 2040, the company forecasts. Although battery vehicles require no fossil fuels to run, they can be linked to carbon emissions if the power supply that charges them runs on natural gas or coal. The world needs more choices as we're working our way through the transition, said Balaji Krishnamurthy, Chevron's Vice President of Strategy and Sustainability. Renewable gasoline can get to lower carbon for 95% of the existing fleet without consumers needing to buy a new car. Oil refiners and car manufacturers like Toyota are trying to come up with ways to decarbonize the internal combustion engine as regulators around the world push to electrify road transport. Pollution standards outlined by the Environmental Protection Agency last week for the coming decades are so stringent that they would effectively compel automakers to ensure that 2/3 of their light-duty vehicle sales are electric by 2032. Lawmakers in the European Union and California have gone a step further, floating the idea of banning internal combustion engine sales in the coming decades. ExxonMobil Corporation also is working on a low-carbon fuel blend. Chevron will demonstrate the renewable gasoline by taking 3 Toyotas on a road trip across the U.S. Gulf Coast, but selling it widely may be some years away due to its cost. For commercial viability, the low-carbon fuel will need fiscal incentives like those built into California's low-carbon fuel standard, said Andy Walls, president of Chevron's Fuels and Lubricants, America's division. David Lee Green, 72, passed away from this life to heaven on April 15, 2023. He was born in Midland, Texas, to Jesse D. Green and Elise Friday. No services are planned at this time. McCoy Funeral Home in Sweetwater is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be expressed at www.mccoyth.com. Scott Wade H. Worley, 42, of Raton, New Mexico, passed away on April 2, 2023. Funeral services will be held at Johnson's Funeral Home in San Angelo, Texas, on 4/20/2023 at 2 p.m. Following the service, a light reception will be held for family and friends at Johnson's Funeral Home. Calling the IRS, Hold Times Down This Tax Season, by Fatima Hussein, Associated Press. Washington, taxpayers who called the IRS had an average wait time of 4 minutes this tax season, compared to 27 minutes a year earlier, the agency said Monday. Ahead of the tax filing deadline on Tuesday, the IRS is promoting its improved customer service and giving credit to a big boost in funding provided by the Inflation Reduction Act that Democrats pushed through Congress last year. The federal tax collector on Monday reported a dramatic turnaround for the 2023 tax season from a year ago, when the agency scored its worst customer service remarks on record. IRS employees this tax season have answered 2 million more calls and served 100,000 more taxpayers in person, it reported. The agency also digitized 80 times more paper forms than in 2022 and cleared the backlog of unprocessed 2022 individual tax returns. New IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel, sworn in earlier this month, promised that to use the new $80 billion infusion of cash over the next 10 years to help the federal tax collector become faster, more tech-savvy, and provide real-world improvements to taxpayers. We're trying to improve services dramatically, said Wally Adeyemo, Treasury's Deputy Secretary, at the Urban Institute event on Monday. At the same event, former IRS Commissioner Charles Rossotti was more critical of the IRS spending plan. There's an under-allocation for technology, he said. They need to spend a lot more time on a compliance strategy. Midland High School's 94th Annual Catico. A presentation of the Catico Court can be found at MRT.com. The following picture includes Santiago Salcido, top left, Sarah Stewart, top right, Annie Davis, and Dean Stoltz. Courtesy photo. SpaceX calls off first launch attempt of giant rocket in Texas, by Marcia Dunn, AP Aerospace Writer. South Padre Island, Texas, SpaceX called off the first launch attempt of its giant rocket Monday after a problem propped up during fueling. Elon Musk's company had planned to fly the nearly 400-foot Starship rocket from the southern tip of Texas near the Mexican border. The test flight was called off with just over 8 minutes left in the countdown because of a stuck valve needed to pressurize the first stage booster. Launch controllers couldn't fix the frozen valve in time, but for practice, took the clocks down to the 40-second mark before halting the countdown. No people or satellites were aboard. There won't be another try until at least Thursday. Learned a lot today, Musk tweeted after the flight was postponed. The company plans to use Starship to send people and cargo to the moon and ultimately Mars. On the eve of the launch attempt, cars, campers, RVs, and even bicycles and horses jammed the only road leading to the launch pad, where the stainless steel rocket towered above the flat scrubland and prairie. Enthusiasts posed in front of the giant letters that spelled out Starbase at the entrance of the SpaceX complex and in front of the rocket 2 miles farther down the road, which ended at a beach on the Gulf of Mexico. Web to speak to avid kids. The ECISD AVID program has announced that NBA star Spud Webb will speak to their AVID seniors about his story of overcoming obstacles and inspire them to pursue their dreams at 6:30 p.m. today in the main theater at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. ECISD has partnered with the AVID program for 15 years, and Complex Community Federal Credit Union has supported the initiative every step of the way, providing opportunities for young people to learn and grow. CCFCU is proud to sponsor this inspirational night with Webb to empower the seniors as they get ready for graduation, a news release said. Webb is a former Midland College student-athlete, point guard for the Atlanta Hawks, and the 1986 NBA slam dunk champion. He always believed that he needed to be taller to succeed in basketball, but he proved that no height is unreachable by achieving success and believing in himself, the release said. Southwest passengers face delays after nationwide grounding by Associated Press. By David Koenig, AP Airlines writer, Dallas Southwest Airlines planes were grounded nationwide for what the airline called an intermittent technology issue, causing more than 1,700 flight delays Tuesday, just 4 months after the carrier suffered a meltdown over the Christmas travel rush. The hold on departures was lifted by late morning shortly after it was announced, according to Southwest and the Federal Aviation Administration, but not before the traffic at airports from Denver to New York City backed up. Southwest has resumed operations after temporarily pausing flight activity this morning to work through data reconnection issues resulting from a firewall failure, the Dallas airline said in a prepared statement. Early this morning, a vendor-supplied firewall went down and connection to some operational data was unexpectedly lost. The airline urged customers to check on their flight status and explore self-service options for travel as the airline worked on restoring its operation. By late morning on the East Coast, Southwest accounted for well over half of all the delays nationwide, but the airline had canceled fewer than a dozen flights, according to FlightAware. The airline's unions have said they warned management about problems with the crew scheduling system after a previous meltdown in October 2021. Southwest said last month it would add dicing equipment and increase staffing during winter weather that is cold enough to limit the amount of time the ground workers can stay outside.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, April 15th, 2023. Front page. WTI ends week above $82, by Mella McEwen. Crude prices held on to the gains made after the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations announced a 1 million barrel cut in oil output earlier this month. Prices rose for the fourth straight week, its longest run of gains since June, and remaining at five-month highs. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 5 trading days, opening the week, losing 96 cents, and falling below $80 a barrel. Prices then recovered, rising $1.79 Tuesday and $1.73 Wednesday, before giving back $1.10 Thursday. WTI added 36 cents to end the week at $82.52 per barrel, up from $80.70 last Thursday. The posted price closed at $79, according to Plains All American. Natural gas also rose 3 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, opening the trading week with a 16-cent gain. Henry Hub futures retreated just over 9 cents Wednesday and almost 9 cents Thursday, before rising 11 cents to close the trading week at $2.117 per MCF, up from $2.011 at last Thursday's close. oil's fourth weekly advance has been mostly relentless as the OPEC Plus output cut has sent global markets into a very deep supply deficit. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americans at Oanda, wrote in his daily newsletter. He said the risk of a couple million barrel deficit in the second half of the year should keep prices supported regardless of whatever noise emerges from the Fed, contemplating another quarter point or so rate in hikes. Moya added, energy traders should feel confident this market will remain tight. Next week, they will pay special attention to China's major economic releases that include first quarter gross domestic product that should show an impressive recovery as the economy reopens from COVID. OPEC's production cut prompted the U.S. Energy Information Administration to revise its price forecasts in the April short-term energy outlook. The EIA increased its forecast for Brent crude, the global benchmark, by 2.5%. Now expecting it to average $85 in 2023, up $3 from its March forecast. The EIA increased its forecast for WTI by $2.14 from its March forecast. The agency said that, despite the cuts, the EIA expects global production of liquid fuels, which includes gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, to exceed 101 million barrels per day for the first time. The OPEC Plus production cut is certainly significant, but we expect growing global production, especially in North and South America, to offset those cuts, said EIA Administrator Joe DeCarolis in a release detailing the short-term outlook. We expect that world oil production and demand for petroleum products will be relatively balanced this year. The biggest risk to our April forecast is slower than expected economic growth, which would limit growth in demand for fuels such as gasoline and jet fuel. Electric vehicles. TxDOT plans to expand charging stations, by Mella McEwen. The Permian Basin may be the dominant source of the crude oil and natural gas that ultimately powers the nation's transportation. But there are plenty of Teslas, Ford F-150 Lightnings, and other electric vehicles driving around the region as well as all across the Lone Star State. In fact, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas estimates Texas will have a million electric vehicles on the road by 2028. Tom Smitty Smith, executive director of the Texas Electric Transportation Resource Alliance, says the growth in electric vehicles in Texas is exceeding expectations. There are 186,000 electric vehicles in Texas, and that number grew 50% from March 2022 to March 2023, he said. Between 2026 and 2033, 50% or more of the vehicles in Texas sold will be electric, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Every projection by consulting firms, government, manufacturers has been wrong because it's moving faster than projections. His association is working with state legislators and agencies to ensure the charging infrastructure to serve those vehicles is in place. We are deeply involved in developing the first maps of the need for infrastructure, a border-to-border network, he said. The Texas Department of Transportation has an electric vehicle infrastructure plan in place, and Smith said his association is working with TxDOT to ensure charging stations are placed where appropriate for drivers, but also where they won't overload the electric grid. The move to electric vehicles is being strongly encouraged by the federal government, which will be sending Texas $408 million to build out charging infrastructure through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Smith said that funding will be distributed in three tranches. The first, to ensure electric vehicle drivers can get from Borger to Brownwood, from El Paso to Orange. Stations will be placed every 50 miles along major interstate highways, convenience stores, or truck stops, Smith said. The second tranche will build out stations every 70 miles along secondary highways, major state highways, and in the 190 counties without some sort of high-speed charging station. That second round will help ensure electric postal trucks and delivery trucks can operate in rural areas, he explained. The third round will head to the state's metropolitan planning organizations, MPOs, to ensure charging stations are placed in overlooked areas, like shopping centers, apartment complexes, and low-income areas. A 2022 report from TxDOT indicates the Permian Basin MPO is scheduled to receive $1.9 million in federal and private funding, and an additional $478,923 in five-year operations and maintenance funding. Cameron Walker, executive of the Permian Basin MPO, told the Reporter-Telegram his organization has not yet received any funding for charging stations. Smith said sending funds to the MPOs will ensure infrastructure is built in an equal manner rather than going to the more affluent areas first, while rural areas and apartment dwellers and low-income neighborhoods get left behind. The plan is the first step in encouraging electric vehicles by building a backbone of charging stations, Smith said. Pending legislation is designed to build the foundation to ensure the transition to electric vehicles occurs smoothly, he said. Senate Bill 1001 would establish an inspection program for charging stations similar to the program for gasoline pumps. SB 1002 aims to ensure the build-out of the charging station infrastructure is done by private industry to the greatest extent possible, Smith said, by limiting how regulated utilities can participate in the charging market. Utilities would be prohibited from utilizing ratepayer funds to build, own, and operate charging stations. To help fund the state's roads and bridges, as the state gasoline tax has done, SB 505 would implement a $400 initial registration fee and $200 annual fee. SB 2508 establishes a planning process requiring TxDOT and 10 other state agencies to devise a plan to not only ensure charging stations are widely available across the state, but can be found in state parks and along evacuation routes. There are also efforts to promote recycling electric vehicle batteries at the end of their lifespan, Smith said. One of the mistakes we've made is, whenever something is new to the market, we haven't figured out what to do with it at the end, he said. Change has worked for Janine Pruitt Lyson. Away from the listings, the successful realtor is living life on her terms. By Stuart Doreen. Janine Pruitt Lyson lives life on her own terms and is thriving. She runs one of the most successful and popular real estate teams in Midland. She tells the Reporter-Telegram she has ranked among the top three agents in the business since 2007, and her company, the Janine Pruitt Team, has been a two-time winner for the Best Real Estate Agency Team in the Reporter-Telegram Reader's Choice Awards. But real estate is what Lyson is good at, not who she is. The lifetime Midlander is very frank about her life, a relatively new life away from open houses and real estate listings. She talks about the opportunities that happened after a failed marriage and issues with family members dealing with addiction. She swears about how counseling and how others in the very competitive real estate business provided her with the tools and support to start again personally, or, as she said, the great opportunity to do a reset. And Lyson shared about the successes of the last 10 years, finding love with Perry Lyson, a private pilot who's helped her find happiness, and having the opportunity to be parents to Maddox and Mason, two grandchildren who needed parental figures at ages 4 and 6. Years later, they have daily structure, routines, better nutrition, and opportunities to reconnect with their mother and father. We tell them, they are your mom and dad, but we are your parents, Lyson said. Parenting keeps Janine and Perry young, she said, as does the opportunities during her second chance at finding happiness. As she said, her passions include real estate, but also travel and family, not in that order. But her marriage to Perry allows for plenty of travel, seeing places, and experiencing life outside of Midland. Our lifestyle means we are conducive to make a difference in their lives, Lyson said. Janine Pruitt designed a team concept to ensure that every client receives top service. Our dynamics and structure create a smooth and successful real estate experience for everyone involved. Those are words from her company's website. Again, real estate is a passion, and she doesn't take a back seat to anyone. She can talk shop about the Midland market she knows. $200 a square foot in Great House, or $350 a square foot in Los Conchos. Sure, $145 a square foot can be found in Midland, but not in the anything new or not in certain parts of town, she added. Lyson has sold enough and been involved with enough flips and rentals to have that knowledge. Her portfolio currently includes 13 rentals and 2 flip houses. She also is becoming very familiar with the new Midland, the younger buyers who want it all right now, like 4 bedrooms, even though the buyers are without kids. I remember I was 38, I got granite, and 39 or 40 before I got a front-loaded washer and dryer, she remarked. They want what their parents have. Lyson is a member of the real estate community, and inside that group are the elite agents, those among the top 10%, maybe the top 40 or 50, in Midland, who she consistently battles it out with for premier listings. She talked about the worthy adversaries in the business, but also those who through the years have made an impact on her, like Norma Pine, who taught her about financial security and provided guidance during times after a rough divorce and other life events that played out more than a decade ago. She talked about the lessons learned from Victoria Prince about marketing and volume, Laura Salas about steady winning the race, and Kay Sutton. She admits not being the agent for everyone, but that doesn't mean she's not going to try and get a person's listing. In an effort to market herself and her business, Lyson has gone to social media with videos that allow potential customers to get to know her. She admits writing the scripts for all the videos herself and recording multiple presentations at a time. In general, the videos provide knowledge about the market, needed tips, showcase a lighter side, and let the potential client also know she can be serious when needed. No one in Midland was doing the videos, and I did not want a younger agent giving expert advice while I was sitting on the sideline, Lyson said. I worked my butt off to get where she was at. If I'm not touting my work, they are not knowing me. I enjoy it. My kids had said people don't know you are funny. It has been nice for people to get to know this side of me. Away from the listings, this is a different Janine, a person who doesn't sweat the small stuff, someone who relies on years of experience but is open to adapting to a new time, a person who has learned that it is okay to seek help. Thank God for therapy, and sharing can help people, she said. And a person who has found success in a new chapter of her life. Mayor to Speak at Luncheon. Business Beat by Ben Schaefer. Business Calendar. Wednesday, 2023 Midland Chamber State of Midland Luncheon. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Bush Convention Center. April 22nd, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 to noon, Downtown Midland. April 22nd through 24th, Oil Patch Agility Club, Horseshoe Livestock Building. April 25th, Fundraising Dinner Benefiting the Life Center, Odessa, 6:30 p.m., Odessa Marriott Hotel. April 28th, Permian Basin Behavioral Center Groundbreaking, 2 to 3 p.m., Wagner Noel Parking Lot. May 1st, First H&H Holdings, LLC, Petro Suites Ribbon Cutting, 11:30 a.m. to noon, 701 West Indiana Avenue. May 11th, Midland Physical Therapy and Float the Float Spa of Midland Ribbon Cutting, 4:30 to 5 p.m., 2420 West Illinois Avenue. May 15th, Tenacious Women Ministries, Grand Opening Ribbon Cutting, 4:30 p.m., 3201 West Wall Street. May 18th, Restoration Celebration, 6 to 8 p.m., Midland Country Club. To add your event, email the information to ben.shaffer@herstnp.com. Midlanders Facing Child Endangerment Charges by Mercedes Cordero. Two Midlanders are facing child endangerment charges after they gave a Tylenol bottle with fentanyl pills inside to two children, according to court documents. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched to Walmart, located at 200 West Interstate 20, in reference to a theft. Two suspects were being detained by a Walmart employee. The employee told the officer that Sergio Matthew Gonzalez, 30, was putting items in his pockets and stole items worth about $225.47. Tracy Cadote, 54, consented to have her person searched for stolen merchandise. The officer found a small Tylenol bottle with blue pills that had the letter M on them, according to the arrest affidavit. The employee also stated that Cadote was trying to get rid of something in a baggie. The baggie contained more blue pills with the letter M. Cadote advised they were fentanyl pills. According to the employee, Gonzalez had the Tylenol bottle first and then gave it to his little daughter to give it to Tracy so he wouldn't get caught with it, according to the arrest affidavit. The officer confirmed that the pills were passed through the little girl and her younger brother in order to give them to Grandma Tracy, according to the arrest affidavit. Gonzalez and Cadote were charged with abandoning or endangering a child by criminal negligence, a state felony. Possession of controlled substance PG2, more than 1 gram but less than 4 grams, a third degree felony. And theft of property greater than $100 but less than $750, a Class B misdemeanor. They have since been released on bond. Permian Basin again adds rigs, Bucks Trends, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity continued to slow with the rig count falling for a third week, while the Permian continued to buck the national trend, rising a second week. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which has been issued weekly since 1944, fell 3 rigs to 748. Still, that's 55 rigs, or about 8% higher than a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for crude fell by 2 to 588, the lowest level in almost a year, but 40 more than the 548 counted last April. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 1 to 157, 14 more than 143 a year ago. Texas reversed last week's gain, dropping 2 rigs to 375, 29 more than the 346 at work statewide last year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 104. Ohio 1 and Oklahoma 3 joined Texas as producing states to see declines, while Louisiana 1 and Pennsylvania 1 joined New Mexico in seeing gains. The Permian Basin added 3 rigs for a second consecutive weekly gain, reporting 357 rigs at work within the region, 22 more than the 334 counted last year. Eddy County, New Mexico, continued to be the most active county in the Permian, reporting 55 rigs for a second week. Lee County, New Mexico, was second with 48 rigs, up 1. Reeves County gained a rig for 43, while Martin County saw 41 rigs at work within county lines for a second week. Midland County had 28, up 1 for the week. Loving County had 27 rigs, down 1. Both Howard and Upton counties reported 19 rigs, down 1 for Howard, while Upton reported 19 rigs for a fifth consecutive week. Both Andrews and Reagan counties had 10 rigs, up 2 for Andrews and unchanged for Reagan. Dawson, Ector, and Kent counties saw no activity this week, with Dawson and Kent counties losing their 1 rigs and Ector the 2 rigs that had been active in the county. Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count during the week ended April 12th, falling by 1 rig from the previous week's peak. The count is down 1% in the last month and up 7% year-over-year. 2 major plays reported declines, with the Anadarko Basin falling by 6 rigs to 68 and the Gulf Coast dropping by 1 at 97. The DJ, Permian, and Williston Basins added 1 rig each to reach 19, 348, and 42, while Appalachia added 2 rigs at 53. Report says Midland has fewest older home buyers in U.S. by Ben Schaefer. Midland has the fewest 55 and older home buyers of any small metropolitan area nationwide, according to a new study by Construction Coverage. The study shows that 11.1% of all home buyers in Midland are 55 or older, while just 2.8% being 65 or older. The median home purchase price for 55 and older home buyers in Midland is $335,000. Odessa has the second lowest percentage of home buyers 55 and older, with 12.8%. The median home buyer price for that population in Odessa is $215,000. The Villages in Florida led with an 82.4% of home buyers ages 55 or older. Rounding out the top five were Homosa Springs, Florida, 57.8%, Punta Gorda, Florida, 57%, Prescott Valley, Prescott, Arizona, 56.3%, and Sebastian Vero Beach, Florida, 54.4%. Nationwide, Americans 55 and older represent 20.7% of home buyers. Note, the report states that for the purpose of the analysis, only conventional residential mortgages originated in 2021 were considered. Sales tax report. Sales tax collection jumps for city and county by Stuart Doreen. The city of Midland's record sales tax pace benefited from a record collection in April. The city reported this week that it collected $5.067 million in sales tax this month, a 24.8% increase compared to April 2022, and around $500,000 more than in 2019. The city also reported that the year-to-date total is $39.127 million, which is 27.17% higher than last year, greater than the $34.406 million collected through April 2019, and $7.004 million greater than budget through April. Last year, the city of Midland finished the fiscal year with $58.439 million in sales tax collected, the second largest annual collection on record. The all-time high mark for an annual sales tax collection was $60.3 million in fiscal year 2019. The city of Midland appears to be in the midst of a hottest streak on record. The collection moved Midland's streak of monthly increases to 18 months compared to the same month during the previous year. 14 times during those 18 months, the city of Midland showed growth of at least 20%, according to Reporter Telegram records. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income for 2 months prior to collection. April collection is based on February sales. The city's fiscal year runs from October through the following September. County continues blistering pace. Through 5 months of Midland County's fiscal year, the sales tax collected is already approaching the forecast for the entire year. For this fiscal year, the county's approved budget showed $43 million in sales tax collected. This week, the Texas Comptroller showed Midland County is 72% of the way there. The county has collected $31.341 million through April after a record collection for the month, $5,914,251. The county's collection is 33.07% higher than last year. Sales tax above the amount projected is put into the county's reserve fund. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. April collection is based on February sales. The county's fiscal year begins in December and ends in November. Midland International reports new high for passengers in March by Stuart Doreen. City of Midland officials reported a new post-9/11 record for airline passengers during the month of March. The city's monthly airport report showed 55,234 passengers boarded an airline at Midland International Airport in March. That was an 11.8% increase over March 2022. The total also was more than the previous high, 53,544, in March 2019. The report also showed 311,698 passengers through the first half of the fiscal year. That was a 14.5% increase compared to 2022. Southwest Airlines dominated in March with 31,027 of those boarding airlines at Midland International. That was 56.17% of the total. United was second with 22.33% passenger share. For the year, 51% of the 311,698 passengers at Midland International had boarded Southwest. Good wound care can mean more than just getting stitches. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Tuesday, April 18th. Dear Dr. Roach, whenever I got a wound while I was young, my mother would take me to the hospital to get stitches. I am now 94. I went to get a wound seen, and the nurse said that it needed to heal from the inside. They treated it with gauze, wrapping, and then a stocking. It took months to heal. Why the big change? Why couldn't they have just put in stitches and saved me months of healing? Answer. A wound can be sutured, stitched, closed when it is new, clean, and regular. A wound cannot be closed if it is infected or irregular. Most chronic wounds cannot be closed by stitching. Also, if there is a lot of swelling in the wound, there may be too much pressure that the wound cannot be closed and must be allowed to heal over time. This is often the case with larger wounds. Basic principles of wound healing are to treat and prevent infection by bacteria or other germs, control pain and bleeding, and avoid treatments that are toxic to open wounds. I hear very frequently from people who have mistreated wounds. Strong agents like hydrogen peroxide, iodine, bleach, and even soaps will kill more of your body's healing cells than bacteria, and they should not be used in open wounds. I also hear people say wounds need air, but wounds heal faster when they are moist. A barrier like petrolatum, Vaseline, or many other proper wound care agents, and a clean cover will accelerate wound healing. Most wounds do not need topical antibiotics, and these should only be used when recommended by an expert. The best experts for wound care are wound care nurses and, in extreme cases, vascular or plastic surgeons. It takes time for a wound to heal. How much time depends on many factors, but a time span of months is not unusual, especially with a person in their 90s who may not have the same blood supply they had when they were much younger.
Drunk uncle pushes family to the limit of tolerance. Dear Abby, my Uncle Fred is rude and obnoxious whenever we are in his presence. He talks down to not only me, but everyone around him. Holidays are unbearable as he creates constant tension, leaving all guests less than enthused. He also drinks too much at parties, which leads to obscenities and poor decision-making. It would be very easy to just stop being in his presence, if not for my darling Auntie June, who is kind to us and always insists on hosting her family for holidays, even after numerous attempts by family members who have all voiced their displeasure with Uncle Fred. Auntie June seems to be helpless in dealing with his unruly behavior. How do we move forward without hurting our dear sweet auntie by telling her we no longer wish to spend holidays together? Enough already in New Jersey. Dear Enough, you have suffered enough. The way to deal with it would be to put in a tad less bluntly. Say, Auntie, we love you, which is why we have tolerated Uncle Fred's drinking and rude behavior as long as we have. But we have reached our limit. From now on, other family members will alternate hosting these gatherings, and if Uncle Fred acts up during any of them, he will have to leave. It would be better than walking out of Auntie's home and leaving her with food she has prepared and no one to eat it. Dear Abby, I'm in my early 30s, married and juggling a full-time job and caring for my children, ages 3 and 6. I live in an affluent area where people have more free time than most. When I'm able to squeeze time in for a play date with local mom friends, I find it annoying when they bring their husbands. I'm all for double dates, but I feel like a third wheel when they bring their spouses along for play dates. A handful of women do this every single get-together with the kids. Their husbands don't need to work as much as mine does. I crave being able to talk freely with other mothers. Even if my husband were available, he wouldn't want to join, and I wouldn't want him to either. When I invite a woman and her kids to my home, I end up having her husband show up at my door, too. I feel like I'm entertaining their whole family instead of just a simple play date. Would it be appropriate to tell these moms to leave their husbands at home during our play dates? If so, how do I go about this politely? Crowded in California. Dear Crowded, there is a difference between a family playdate and a mom's playdate. In the latter, the woman usually let their hair down and discuss subject they may not mention in mixed company. I do not think it would be rude to tell these moms that you prefer that they leave their husbands at home. Dear Abby, I am 68 years old and I have a Gator gas scooter, which I love to ride. My sons think I am too old to be riding it. They think I should sell it. Am I too old to ride a scooter? Unsure in Tennessee. Dear Unsure, let me put it this way. Accidents happen and many have nothing to do with age. Google George Clooney, Simon Cowell, and Jay Leno, and then make up your mind.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.